Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Jo Minardi.
And the Golden Globes were last night, and Taylor Antrim, deputy editor and resident film critic for Vogue, are in the studio. It is bright and early, 7 a.m.
Hello, hello. Jo, I think you're in London.
I am.
And Jose Crias-Unzueta, fashion news writer for Vogue Runway. Jose, where are you?
I am in La Paz, Bolivia, where I grew up. I'm in my mom's home.
Amazing.
I'm flying back to New York tonight, actually.
So how on earth did you watch?
On literally just cable.
Oh, it was
on TNT.
And then, yeah. Joma, have you pulled an all-nighter to watch the Golden Globes in the UK and are now with us?
No.
No, we're going to tell Joma about the Golden Globes.
Oh.
I'm here to discover more about the Golden Globes.
Joma is our straight man.
Yeah, I am. Aside from the fashion stuff, which I definitely did a bit of a deep dive on, and definitely went on TikTok and definitely very invested in all the Timothée Chalamet and Kylie Jenner PDA moments.
Well, this is the way to consume the Golden Globes.
Taylor said he felt bad for Bradley Cooper winning Maestro.
I actually had a moment deep into the third hour when it was clear that, you know, Bradley wasn't going to win anything.
Well, no, Cillian Murphy won.
Anything.
Exactly.
Cillian Murphy won.
Well, he'd already lost for director, which I guess was an open and shut case, but I was still thinking maybe.
I really thought they were going to give it to him.
So did he. You can tell on his face.
Did you see his face? He most certainly did.
First, I'll start with the fact that it was extremely difficult to watch the red carpet, which I found annoying.
Yes. It was actually not a good live stream at all for the red carpet. Everyone kept getting cut off. I miss Juliana Rancic, Joan Rivers, and E! Entertainment Television. Like, I never thought I would say this, but
the red carpet was a non-event, but the outfits were there.
The outfits were definitely there.
The one thing I learned from the red carpet, which was important, was that Rosamund Pike's spectacular apple veil was actually to mask a ski accident.
Yes. So she wore a fall 2019 Dior Couture gown. She always wears Dior. And she wore a Philip Tracy lace veil to hide a ski accident bruise. And you know what it reminded
Genius.
Me of? Of Gwyneth Paltrow's ski accident where she lost a whole day of skiing. And I was like, this is just glamour.
Ski accident, so chic. In 2024, I love it.
Exactly. You have to wear a custom lace veil with your couture because you had a ski accident over the holiday break. That is very Saltburn.
I mean, I don't want to start on a negative note, but if the red carpet was a bust and then the opening monologue was
oof.
I mean,
painful.
World's worst moment for the Golden Globes ever, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah.
It went up from there, I would say, right? Bad start, and then
I thought the show itself moved at quite a clip. I feel like at one point I looked up, I was like, oh, it's already 10. I thought, although the presenters were so random.
So random and very slow.
Suits.
I mean, it's they didn't understand how to use the time properly,
yeah.
Which is the thank you speeches felt like everyone was given about 10 seconds to thank people. But the presenters could vamp for, 15 minutes with their
unfunny
jokes.
They needed the music.
For the presenters.
The presenters needed the music.
They really needed to get cut off. It was so strange. Also, all the presenters are so weird. What is Suits? I get it. People are rewatching Suits, but do we need to do that?
I was very confused by that. I found myself typing to the group. I was like, is Suits on now? I knew it wasn't. I knew it was an old show. But there was this idea that the cast of Suits is here.
Someone on one of the Slack channels, I forget who it was, said the Suits cast is all over this broadcast like a rash.
And it was crazy. And even in the red carpet, they asked the two guys Suits is being so popular right now. Meghan Markle's in it. We're we know. What are we doing?
She's the only person out of Suits that I can even name.
Yeah.
But they're not bringing Suits back, are they? Or are they?
They might be. I think they're trying to.
Okay.
This is the one thing I remember from the red carpet live stream. They asked them about it, and there's a spin-off in the works.
I see.
Something in the Suits universe, whatever that means.
The extended Suits universe. Did people feel that the Golden Globes were like, this is like a new Golden Globes? Was it? Did it feel relevant? Did it feel like we needed to have it? It started so in such a stumbling way. But, you know, did you feel like, gosh, I'm glad we have the Golden Globes at the end of the night?
I did feel that way because partially there was such a dearth of red carpet glamour and right.
Coming into this night.
Coming into this because of the strikes. I feel like we all really wanted this. And I do feel like the Golden Globes, it's a different vibe than the other shows. Like, I mean, everyone should go on and look at our Inside the Golden Globes photos. But people are cozy and they're having fun. And Timmy and Kylie are snuggling and Selena and Taylor hanging out. It's much more convivial than any other award show. And I think that sets a different tone. And it's fun to see that and to have that especially kick off this like 6 week run.
Yeah. And the Golden Globes have always been sort of the minor key award ceremony compared to the Oscars, where you feel like you can almost get away with a disastrous host. Like his name is Joe Coy.
Yeah.
Right. Which no one knew who he was before last
night.
Chelsea Handler did.
She used to date him.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. She did come prepared. The Golden Globes can get away with a little weirdness like that,
yes.
You know? And
like Kieran Culkin's speech?
I love Kieran Culkin's speech.
Kieran Culkin won for Succession, and he was so grumpy. He burped.
Indigestion?
Yeah.
I thought that was relatable.
Well, the funniest part of his speech was the suck it, Pedro, to Pedro Pascal, because
yeah,
he won
so
over
funny.
Pedro.
Why did he go after Pedro in that moment? It was just in his line
Honestly,
of sight?
I think so. And also, I don't know. I mean, Pedro's like one of the internet's boyfriends, so might as well.
I
feel like the Golden Globes were like viral everything.
Why did he have that arm brace on? Another skiing accident? Do we know?
Gosh, I hope so for him.
We should do a post on all the injuries of the Golden Globes.
I was like, poor
guy. That is a good question.
Everyone's coming up beaten up after the
He had a sling on or something?
Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, he had his sling on.
And what was his sort of Marine Serre-esque turtleneck, Jose?
He was wearing Bottega. It was based on the closing look of Spring 24. So it's kind of like a fuzzy knit. I wish they would have made it a custom matching sling.
Oh, yes.
They should have done. That was maybe it happened too late. That would have been amazing.
Definitely.
Could you imagine with that print on it?
Oh, my God.
Exactly. I would have lived for it.
Who else wore Bottega?
Julianne Moore.
That red dress. Very fab. And then Michelle Yeoh wore Bottega as well. An orange dress.
Jose, to me, you are a resident menswear aficionado.
For me, the Golden Globes are always an interesting barometer when it comes to where the fashion is going for award season. Because everyone takes the Oscars incredibly seriously, and they all take themselves very seriously, especially male actors. Everyone's posing to make sure their watch is being shown because of sponsorship, and everyone's in a bow tie and a Brioni suit, you know, like... But what's interesting about the Golden Globes is that it kind of shows you, like, it's like a temp check. And it was fun to see a lot of people having a little bit of fun when it comes to menswear. It wasn't particularly a directional night. There wasn't anything that you're like, wow, amazing, menswear's changed for life. But it was cute.
Who were your faves?
When it comes to menswear, I mean, Charles Melton is like the handsomest man in the world, honestly.
He is, isn't
like,
it? It's distracting. I can't even see the clothes.
It's really distracting. But he was in Armani, and he looked really great. Very handsome. Cillian Murphy and Saint Laurent, I thought was amazing.
He looked great.
Oh, my God.
Also
the
loved.
Times made me that laugh. Was... They said it was most Lydia Tarr.
It was so good. It was very, very
It was
good.
So Lydia Tarr. It was great. Andrew Scott and Valentino was fun. He was in head-to-toe white, which I usually don't love. But he was actually matching with Jonathan Bailey, who also wore head-to-toe white.
I
and
saw
I was like,
that.
Wow.
Swoon.
I'm like, are we guys doing something I wasn't briefed on? Like, why are we doing the full white? But you know what? It was cute. Lenny Kravitz and McQueen. Fab. You know,
only
with a little
Nelly
like
could pull off that. I mean,
exactly. With like this... It was
a
jumpsuit with a slutty, like, cutout.
With
yes.
a back,
so,
open back, right?
With an open back, exactly. So it was kind of, it was a white trouser with, like, a very slim cut jacket. But it was a jumpsuit. And it had a cutout in the back, like, from the front going all the way to the back. He's been loving, like, a tiny waist, big pant sort of moment. What I also actually found interesting is that Jeremy Allen White wore Calvin Klein. And the reason why I find that interesting is not just because of his viral campaign, but because Calvin Klein hasn't really been dressing celebrities or doing ready-to-wear at all.
Well, do they have a designer, Jose? Who's their designer?
So They actually don't. Willy Chavarria was actually their men's SVP until recently. He left. But they actually have sort of like after Raf Simons left Calvin, and that was a whole mess. They really haven't been doing anything other than the usual Calvin stuff that you know, that everyone buys, like the underwear, like the athleisure, etc. But I think this was kind of like their tease at coming back. You know, maybe Calvin is going to stage a comeback. Those were my favorite in men's, I will say. And Coleman Domingo looked really great in Vuitton.
That's what I was going to say. Coleman Domingo, when he came in early and he had the Nehru collar and the jewelry. It was good. There was good men's jewelry. I liked men in jewels. As Marley Mary has pointed out, it was a couple of men who had gone full frontal in their films, like Charles Melton and Barry Keoghan. So it was family jewels times two.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God. What a connection.
We love a good
to
headline.
She's going to kill me.
Yeah, she totally is going to kill me.
It's actually interesting. Coleman and Barry Keoghan, who also wore Louis Vuitton, they both had like the brooches. Which is something that Pharrell is pushing at Vuitton, clearly. We saw it in his first collection, so it was interesting to see it make its way to the red carpet, especially because Barry's stylist replaced the Vuitton jewels with Tiffany jewels.
Oh, interesting.
But they kind of still committed to the look of, you know,
I do feel like a brooch is one of the few ways a man, like, that's a tip. I don't know if that's a new thing, men wearing brooches, no? But I do feel like on the red carpet to really go for it.
Yeah, exactly. And that feels relatively new on the red carpet because, you know, there's really so much guys can do. It's like, you know, Timmy always wears his Cartier necklace and like a couple of rings. He makes sure he gets like the shot with his hands in front of his torso to, you know, make sure that the sponsorship check is cleared. But, you know.
I mean, my favorite thing also that Marley Marius said was that, honestly, Timothy Chalamet and Meryl Streep were low-key matching.
They really were. He was wearing Celine, which is interesting.
Chalamet, you came in hot this morning. You checked all the looks. What was your immediate takeaway?
First of all, I think the most stunning look by far and away was Hunter. You know, Hunter Schafer.
Oh, incredible.
Tell us about the look, Chalamet.
Yeah.
So it was a version of the kind of very kind of floating shift dresses that we saw that almost looked like, I don't know, like amoebas. They were like floating along the runway at Prada. And I don't know whether she had a wind machine. I couldn't tell what was
I mean, there must have been
happening.
The highest grade leaf blower on that red carpet.
I was joking about that on Instagram because I was like, there's like Dara, who's her stylist, definitely showed up with a leaf blower. But apparently it was a very windy day in LA.
No way.
So that is some fashion serendipity.
That dress does not work without wind, baby. It does not work.
It does not. It does not. It's literally just fabric. You know, she got lucky. Or, you know, she has a really committed stylist.
It was a really, like, the most elegant, glamorous jellyfish.
Oh, my God. It was.
Yes.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
And, Jose, you said that you touched that fabric and that it feels just like air.
It's really hard to describe, but it feels almost like a little cloud. It's like completely what you'd expect that fabric to be for it to float like that. I will say custom Prada doesn't always hit for me, but when it comes to Hunter, she has to be the favorite daughter. Like, they always make her the best looks.
Yeah, she never misses. She hasn't missed. I felt like it was a return to kind of like very the hourglass. I was talking to my colleagues Julia and Laura here at British Vogue, and we were, and Laura just mentioned it, and I just thought, oh, that's so true, because so much kind of classic, you know, Hollywood vavoom. Even to see Greta Lee in that very kind of like almost, she looked amazing, but it was much more classic Hollywood than we've seen her. She was in this very cream, almost like 40s style dress that was Loewe. She looked stunning
with a remarkable back.
Remarkable.
Yeah,
back.
That was.
Yeah, it was almost like you needed to see it from the back.
The fun part about that dress is that it's actually from the fall 2020 collection with Loewe. It was like the last show before the pandemic. Mm. So they just kind of like pulled it out, remade it in white, judged it up, and then just put it on the runway, which I thought was amazing.
It felt so different to what he's doing now. You just felt like, oh.
Exactly. Exactly. And speaking of Loewe, I also actually, and Past Lives, I loved Celine's song.
Oh my God,
also
same.
In Loewe.
So good.
In my it top was three.
Incredible. Definitely top three. And she's not number three. It was like so fab.
Celine Song wore a custom Loewe suit, but with an enormous pin.
As a belt-ish kind of moment. Yes. So it was something that Jonathan Anderson introduced in the spring 2024 men's collection in a more conceptual way. And then in the women's show in last September, he put it as like kind of like what Celine wore, which is like a pin, like a literal like massive oversized pin holding the pants, which I thought was fab.
That she looks like a sewing, you know.
It looks like just a pin, like a sewing pin.
Yeah, but just enormous,
giant,
just holding
needle.
The fabric together.
It reminded me of in Cinderella when the Mousies do Cinderella's dress, and like all the things are so enormous for them. Like it was just an enormous version of a regular sewing pin.
It really was, but I love this sort of like past lives.
Loewe
as well. I love the past lives Loewe intersection. It's like the intersection of my interests. Like one of my favorite brands, one of the
movie,
best movies of the
that
last
movie
year.
Sadly shut out though, unfortunately.
Yeah, why did that movie get shut out?
I know.
I mean, it's a small movie.
It's still time.
Definitely. Yeah, but I thought Greta would have been nominated.
She would have been nominated, but that's a stacked field for best actress.
Right.
And I mean, there's no beating Lily Gladstone at this point. Speaking of, what was she wearing? Who was she wearing, guys? Lily
she
Gladstone.
She was in Valentino. I didn't love this, like, it was a very voluminous black stole. There were a lot of stoles last night. A lot of draping over arms from, like, Margot Robbie's feather duster thing, like, sort of, like, loofah. To Lily's, like, black taffeta Valentino thing. But, I mean, she looked spectacular, and the dress looked great on her. The stole was a bit much.
Speech really hit, too.
It was a lot of fabric.
Yeah, the speech sounded great.
It really did, and it seemed heartfelt, and I just wish that movie had given her more to do. Killers of the Flower Moon is like
Christian Allaire agrees with you.
I mean, she basically, for most of the movie, has to remain, like, desperately in love with a like murderous, villainous husband and lie on her deathbed. And I am celebrating Lily Gladstone's moment. I think she looked great. I thought the tears in the eyes that you saw from Leo DiCaprio seemed like real. I mean, it was a very personal, emotional speech. But I just thought, like, is this really the best we can do for an actress like this? I think it'll be interesting to see what she does next, because I think there may be more interesting roles for her to come, even though this one seems to be an award season, like, you know, gimme.
Home run.
At this point. Yeah. And beating some incredible actresses. I mean,
it's a very, you're right, stacked category.
It's a stacked category, so.
The run through will be back in just a moment.
Hey, I'm Molly Sims.
And I'm Emisha Gormley.
We are two best friends with one common obsession.
Beauty.
And by that, we mean everything that makes you look
and feel
beautiful. We tried it all and we've got your back. We'll be calling on all our favorite health experts, industry insiders, and friends to answer all your beauty questions. Consider us your beauty 411 and sometimes your 911.
From how to fix brassy hair
to the pros and cons of laser facials,
and always with a cocktail in hand.
Always. So be prepared to be obsessed. Check out Lipstick on the Rim wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. And we're back.
Wait, so Taylor, I'm curious, who are you giving the Oscar to, Lily or Emma Stone?
Well, I'm giving it to Lily. I think it will be hard for people, particularly after that speech, not to give it to Lily and the historical nature of it. And I don't think that Poor Things is the kind of movie that steals the spotlight from Killers of the Flower Moon. Poor Things is like, It's very imaginative, certainly should be seen, but and I love Yorgos's films. But to me, this one was a little strange, a little bit overlong, which is a theme among many of the movies, actually, that are being celebrated award season.
Yep, I agree.
Just a little discomforting. I mean, I wasn't sure I was enjoying myself by the end of Poor Things.
Jose, we're doing a roundup today of, like, the best vintage looks on the red carpet, and there was actually some great vintage moments.
Yes, Elle Fanning wore Pierre Balmain, like from the Balmain archives, which was a really beautiful moment, I thought.
And it was like a cream strapless.
Yeah,
real
it was a cream strapless
gown
with like an oversized, with an oversized bow, which I thought was lovely. And controversial yet brave, Kylie Jenner also looked amazing in a lace vintage dress by Hanae Mori. Hanae Mori is a Japanese designer. She was one of the two female Japanese designers to ever show in Paris Fashion Week right at the beginning of it. She passed away, I believe, either last year or the year before. But I thought it was like a very lovely pick. It was very old Hollywood. You know, we don't really have photos of her standing up because she like went straight inside. But she, I thought she looked lovely.
There were some good beauty moments. Emma Stone, we had the exclusive on her new haircut, which debuted on the red carpet.
She looked great.
Blunt bob.
Yeah, she looked fab.
She gives such, like, captain of the theater club in her high school vibes.
Oh.
I love Emma Stone, but that's huge. I mean, she seems like she'd have this sort of, like, you know, polite withdrawing persona, but then she gets up at the microphone and you feel like she's going to do like musical theater or something like that. She's great.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah. She runs a tight ship at a drama club.
Totally.
You know what dress I love that I don't know if you guys see? Gillian Anderson.
Me too, but what was it?
Did you see it? She was wearing a white dress, raw edge at the hem. It was Gabriella Hearst, and in a nod to, and it's something, it was very Gabriella, very her, and a nod to Sex Education, I think, it had vulvas embroidered all over the dress.
Oh,
I missed that. I did not see that.
Yes, yeah.
I like that it looked like a sort of raw muslin.
Yes, exactly. I mean, she's just fabulous.
She's the best. I thought Divine Joy Randolph in the Rodarte, I mean, I was a little worried about her having a wardrobe malfunction,
we
but she looked spectacular.
Yeah. Yes. My mom said the same thing when she like stood up to go in. She was like, wait. And I was like, it's fabulous. It's Rodarte. It's great. That's how you use a peplum. I really do not want peplums to come back, but if it's with she's been having a really good run. It's a whole
I like
list.
The dress, but I'm not with you on the peplum. I think the peplum was unnecessary.
It was a big but peplum see, night, though.
Yeah.
It was a big peplum night.
For
it
better
was
or for
really
worse.
Yeah, we're nearing that territory, and I'm not here.
But, I'm know, always was, on the fence fine. About peplum at the best of times. It is not my favorite, but...
Yeah, it just never works.
Oh, you know who I also thought looked good was... and this is uncharacteristic, because I think my whole lineup is just black and white, was also Riley Keough in Chanel.
I love her.
I thought she looked really beautiful.
Oh, that was really pretty. That was really funny during the live stream because they were like, guy interviewing her was like, why is your hair dark? And she was like, because I'm working on something. Okay, but like, what is that something? And she was like, she was kind of like, leave me alone.
Well, and then he was like, but, how did you choose this dress? She goes, I tried it on.
Exactly.
She's the new Hugh Grant.
I love this club
of people who are just like not having it.
I know.
Absolutely not having it. Oh, wait. I want to give a shout out to Billie Eilish. She wore Willa Chavarria.
Controversial
who
for
I
me.
Love.
Well, I thought the hair was not working for Billie Eilish. But I mean, I love Billie Eilish.
I don't know if you were her target audience.
This was the funniest thing because I was watching the live stream and I'm like, oh, that looks familiar. And then they asked her what she was wearing. And she's like, oh, I pulled this like Willy thing. And I was like, Willie, who I'm like, girl, give me the full credit. So then,
yeah, I know they have to.
So get this. Then I text Willie, and I'm like, "Is Billie Eilish worrying you?" And he's like, "I'm not sure. What's tonight?"
Oh my god!
So like, no, I love how nonchalant. Yeah. Please stop.
So I'm like, babe, it's the Golden Globes. I sent him a photo. He's like, "Oh my god, yes. Wait, I forgot that was tonight. I'm watching Drag Race Mexico." So I'm like, Willie,
love
you need Willie to switch
forever.
The title. I love him forever. He's so fun.
But wait, no one's talked about Io, who I thought looked gorgeous. Can you tell me what Io was wearing?
Io looked great in Prada. Yeah, she
in
looked
Prada
great.
As well.
It was another... I mean, I just felt a lot of the starlets, though, the younger starlets dressed quite kind of grown up.
Yeah.
In a way that I felt like they're safe.
I
they could have been
agree.
More been more playful with it, you know? And I, as, like, I thought Billy, you know, Billy was Billy and looked great. And
and like
different.
Billy's 22.
For the record, I'm only objecting to the red hair in the front, the two like vampire spikes of red hair in the front. For the record, I think the Willy Tavario looked great. I love the speech. I love that Phineas stands behind her mute.
No matter what.
No matter what. Seemed like he maybe wanted to get in there at the end, and she was like, nope, we done. No, I talked about my feelings before Barbie. She was so depressed before Barbie came along and pulled her out of her depression. I mean, I'm here for Billie Eilish. I love Billie Eilish.
No, but I will agree about Ayo and the Prada. It was a beautiful dress, but it felt a little too grown. I find Ayo to be such a fun, sort of like bubbly personality.
She can wear anything.
She can wear anything. And she's worn, like, this is my take. I thought she is way more interesting than that dress is, if that makes sense.
I agree.
So it's a beautiful dress. She looked beautiful. She looked amazing. She looked like a winner. But I'm like, I need a little more pizzazz, in the words of Deanna Vreeland.
The moment we all loved was when she thanked everyone's assistants. Her managers and agents' assistants for responding to her emails. I feel like people really responded
and
well.
And Taylor Swift like nodded wholeheartedly. Yeah. Is like, thank you to all those assistants that have responded to my emails.
I bought tickets to my tour.
When was the last time you talked to an assistant? Like, yes. Yes.
Oh, but we didn't talk about Taylor's new Gucci.
I thought it's honestly one of her best, the best she's ever looked. I'm not particularly a huge fan of her fashion. She looks good, but she's not particularly like, you know, a fashion icon. It was a green Gucci dress.
Full
super
sequins,
pretty,
head to toe.
Full sequin, head to toe, backless. But what
any
I thought
Easter
was the most
eggs
interesting
there? Was
is,
she trying to communicate something?
Well, we were discussing it, and I think it was like a reference to the snake and Reputation, potentially.
Exactly. You know, that's what I saw the Twitter kids say.
Taylor is shaking
but I will
his
no,
head.
No. The thought that was going through my head, honestly, was best Taylor album by a mile.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it says so much about the direction of Gucci. Gucci used to dress like, you know, under Alessandro Michele, used to dress Lana Del Rey, Florence and the Machine. You know, it was kind of like they went for the weirdness.
Yeah.
And it was maximalist. Like, we all know what Gucci used to look like. And now under Sabato De Sarno, who showed his debut collection in September, he's showing his debut collection for menswear, who Ryan Gosling was wearing a tease of that this week, actually, on Friday, I believe. But I think it shows us that, you know, they are going a little bit more streamlined with the direction. You know, it's less
more
maximalist,
megawatt.
It's less weird.
Sexy.
It should be interesting. I mean,
yeah, Julia
sexy,
Garner
exactly.
also wore
yes,
Gucci.
Julia Garner
also
wore Gucci.
I like that dress.
I like that dress a lot.
That dress was fab. It was a silver
dress. Yeah, I mean, I was worried
dress.
About wardrobe malfunction there, too, but she was
I know so many potential wardrobe malfunctions. Julia Garner's dress, for people who did not see, was too silver strips of sequins over her breasts and then a great, you know, a sort of fitted sequin column skirt. And she looked fantastic, but, you know, I hope there was a lot of tape.
Listen, the double-sided tape has been working over time.
Scotch should sponsor.
Honestly, it feels like some of the tailors are on strike. You know, a lot of the menswear hems were not working. Pants were too long. Pants were too short.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Jackets Jose, I always fitting. Really appreciate that on your Instagram, that you really bring my attention to the men's tailoring, which is important and, like, should get it right, honestly.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, girl, if it's two pieces, the least you can do is hem the pants. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to take in a whole corset. Like, you can hem a pant.
Do you have strong feelings about where the pants should break, like where the hem should be?
Yes, I do. well, for me, like, I have two examples. Like, for example, Andrew Scott, friend of the pod, looked amazing in Valentino, but I thought his pant was, like, half an inch too short. It was a wide pant, and you can tell that it didn't, like, it was meant to touch the floor, because that's what Valentino Couture has been doing, and it didn't quite. Mm. So I'm like, you know, it's fine, but he looked great.
Look, why
and
should a Barry... white hem touch the floor? That is going to be dirty.
Dirty.
Choma!
That's so true. Although Andrew Scott doesn't care
exactly.
about that.
No.
White suede shoes around Manhattan, as we know from our interview with him.
It's also like, sorry to burst the bubble, but they're not his clothes.
I know.
That's true.
But also like Barry Keoghan, for example, he was wearing Vuitton and it was a runway look. And, you know, my short king, he's a little shorter than a runway model. And
yeah, the bunching.
Tell. Exactly. The bunching at the bottom, at the hem. I'm like, you know, it looks a little weird. Like, for me, a tailored pant should only have one break.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have, like, two or three, you know? And Barry's had like three, and I'm like, okay, maybe you know.
I like the color though. I like the color of the suit.
He's fun on the red carpet. Like, he's a guy. He's a little weird. He has a good time. You know, he's been working out his arms, so he's wearing a lot of vests. I've been
liking his streak of vests. Me too.
His stock is definitely in ascendancy. Like, we're all gonna be looking for the next Barry Keoghan role.
Hi, we're Carlene and Jill, hosts of Breaking Beauty Podcast, the show all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty. On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests like Emily Weiss of Glossier, and you'll get beauty tips galore from the top pros in the industry, like Kim Kardashian's makeup guru, and you'll hear skincare secrets from the likes of Dr. Pimple Popper. Plus, you'll get shopping help with our Damn Goods episodes, where we review the latest products hitting store shelves to let you know what's actually worth your money. Listen every Wednesday to Breaking Beauty Podcast.
Can I mention another speech I really liked?
Please.
I thought, I now no longer know how to say his name. I used to say Matthew McFadden, but that is
wrong. Oh, yes. That was confusing. McFadden.
McFadden. There's an extra syllable in his last name. Who knew?
I know.
I guess everyone did.
Who knew?
You know, I thought his speech was great, and it was good succession vibes all night, I thought.
Good succession vibes. I
love the, what did he call Tom? It was like a human grease stain.
Yeah. I know, that had me rolling.
Yeah, it was so funny. He's so funny.
More
I love
Sarah
Snook winning as well. Yeah, honestly. The fact that he was in Pride and Prejudice to this day still like gives me, like polarizes me.
Which one?
The Keira Knightley, Joe Wright one.
He was Mr. Darcy.
I like the Colin Firth one.
Then,
from a million years ago. That one. That
we all like that one.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought the Golden Globes made TV look good this year. My take is that
I agree.
Another argument for pro Golden Globes is I do feel like there is something to be argued for one award show that really celebrates both TV and film, especially as we continue to be in this era of prestige TV. Emmys is just TV.
Yeah.
Oscars is just film. Like, Golden Globes really feel like people are together enjoying
it. Right, it glamorizes TV a little bit. I mean, the argument could be made that TV doesn't need it because TV has had this golden age, but I would say this year the pool is quite shallow when it comes to TV, and the fact that they picked out The Bear, Succession, and Beef, those are three shows that I think were very successful creatively. We all love the cast of all of them.
Yeah.
It was good vibes around the TV awards, but when you get to some of the like ancillary TV awards with the nominations, and it's like all these like series and shows you've never heard of, I thought to myself, oof, you can't like dive too deeply into TV in 2023 for awards. But I thought they got it right.
Yeah.
And they made TV seem like a lot of fun, frankly. When it comes to award show innovation, I think some of the things introduced by the Golden Globes this year I'm not here for. Number one, the stand-up comedy award.
Oh, yeah.
The most random thing
God.
I've ever seen. Ricky Gervais didn't even come, you know, and he wins the first, like, Golden Globes stand-up comedy award. And then, of course, the very strange new award they introduced for cinematic and box office achievement, which is this enormous grab bag of all these movies that made tons and tons of money.
Yeah.
The Super Mario
Brothers.
It feels
a little craven.
And then you have to ask yourself, what are we doing? I mean, I know the answer to that, which is that award shows have been criticized for showering their attention on all these very niche, small art films that most of America doesn't actually go to see. I mean, and so this is sort of a corrective to that. And in the superhero era, it was all these movies that were dominating everybody's attention, but in award shows, you know, were nowhere to be seen. Barbie won it, right? Like, that's the one that won it.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I mean, okay, yeah, Barbie was a huge box office phenomenon. You sort of have to give it to Barbie. But I didn't actually feel bad for the Barbie people going up, but I thought, you know, they didn't actually win a legitimate meritocratic award. I feel like they won something, you know, some kind of consolation award, and they made
$1 billion.
So what's
prize.
A consolation about? What are, you know, it felt very strange to me.
Yeah. It's also like, you know, the award to get Taylor Swift nominated and to attend, and then you don't give it to Taylor Swift.
Totally.
Did you think Taylor Swift thought she had
a chance? Because I thought she had a chance. And if they gave it to Taylor Swift, I mean, box office achievement, yes, but cinematic achievement for the Eras Tour movie, that would be a stretch.
I'm telling you,
I think she thought she had a shot.
I think Gucci thought she had a shot too. But I need to talk about supporting actor.
Okay.
Robert Downey Jr. I have questions, Taylor. Who do you think? Are you happy with that win? Do you think it should have been someone else?
No, I wasn't particularly happy with that win. I need to check the
Charles Melton
nominees.
Would have been so handsome.
Yeah, I thought Charles Melton had a shot.
Yeah,
May December.
Me too.
Has everyone seen May December? That movie is
good. So
I really want to see it.
And I feel like people are just still catching up to it. But that movie is crazy good. Very weird.
Yeah.
I kind of wish Julianne Moore had won because I thought her performance in that movie is such a high wire act and so effective. But who are
I mean, the three performances are just like, everyone was running laps around each other. I was like really gagged about how good everyone was. But Charles Melton to be able to like stand his ground with Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore, to me, deserves an award itself.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be him or Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here for Barbie, really, so I feel like Ryan Gosling did all the work he needed to do just sitting there and smiling and looking great.
Right. Just Ken.
Very Ken doll of him. Just Ken dolling.
Yeah, just Kenning.
Just there to be supportive.
I mean, De Niro was good in that endless Killers of the Flower Moon movie, so I guess
it's
if
true.
You're Robert Downey Jr. and you beat out Robert De Niro, you feel like, great, you know. But when Robert Downey Jr. won, the thought that went through my head is like, uh-oh, this is an Oppenheimer year. Like, it's just going to go.
It's a sweep. It's going to be a sweep.
And I am a little confused by this. Like, would Oppenheimer be in the position it is now if it had not come out on the same weekend as Barbie? Barbie lifted Oppenheimer into pole position
for
award season?
Yes, that's such a great theory. I really think you're right.
I think it. Yeah, I agree.
So Barbie gets the assist of the year with...
Wow, interesting.
You know, another consolation
Barbie
prize
becomes
for
Ken.
The billion-dollar-making Barbie movie. But yeah,
such a good strategy on their part to do it at the same time, because I mean, usually don't they avoid that?
I
feel like it was an accident.
Yes,
it was like
too.
An accident of history that these two movies came out.
Yeah,
everyone went to see them in a year that was otherwise. I think it wound up being not disastrous at the box office, but still not great, and nothing compared to the 2019-2018 era. We're still climbing out of the hole from COVID. But Hollywood is in a mood to continue to reward event theatrical movies. And you know, the streaming movie, the fate of Maestro strikes me as like, you know, you can take that Netflix money and make your dream project, but you may get overlooked at the time, at award season, when you're up against movies that took the purest route, went out into movie theaters, and people actually like went out of their houses and went to go see them. I feel like that's what people really want to reward.
And I agree.
As much as I didn't find my way into Oppenheimer as like a, I didn't love it. I was sort of dazzled by it as a technical achievement, but it left me a little emotionally cold. I am happy to be in a world where Hollywood wants to find the next Oppenheimer. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because
Not Super Mario.
Imagine if that had won. I went to see that movie with my 9-year-old William. It was bewildering, that movie.
Bewildering is a great word.
Bewildering.
I mean, pleasant enough. Pleasant enough.
Jose, wait, what was the tea on Taylor Selena?
That's I was going to say, speaking of cinematic events.
Depends how good you can lip read, right?
Exactly. Depends on the lip reading. So the lip reading experts on Twitter, which, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But at one point, Selena stood up from her table, went to Taylor, her bestie, to Taylor Swift, whispered to her and Kaylee Teller, and was like, according to Twitter, what she said is, I tried to take a photo with him and she said no. And then Kaylee Teller, exactly. And then Kaylee Teller was like, Timothy? And then, so the internet is going wild talking about how Kylie Jenner didn't let Selena Gomez take a photo with her former co-star, Timothée Chalamet. We don't know.
Oh, again, this is the most like unsubstantiated, wonderful take.
I know.
On what
exactly. Exactly.
The lip reader PhDs on Twitter have weighed in with a transcript.
Exactly.
And you know how they're backing it up? They're saying that she took a photo with pretty much everyone else.
Exactly. So this is like, you know, the mental gymnastics.
They've been up all night.
It's unbelievable.
Doing forensic analysis.
Wait, but what did Selena and Timothy co-star in?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. What were they in?
Yeah, it's A Rainy Day in New York. It's Timothée Chalamet, Elle Fanning, Selena Gomez, Jude Law, Diego Luna.
Give me the year.
Passed me by.
It's a Woody Allen movie.
Oh, right.
Oh, my God.
It's the one that you I remember that.
COVID. No
exactly.
Woody Allen.
Exactly. It got no press because, you know, cancellation of it all.
Right. But, and then Timothy didn't want to say it, couldn't really say anything, comment on it. I remember that whole
exactly.
moment.
Like, speaking of movies that no one watched, but they were a romantic couple in the film. This is what it's like to be a celebrity today.
The internet is so petty. Come on now.
Exactly. But also, I heavily relate to Selena, where like something happens to me and then I run to my friend. You know, I'm like me at the CFDA Awards, like just running to someone's table to just tell a little tea.
And this brings us back to the thing that we like about the Golden Globes, where you can't imagine that moment happening at the Oscars, right? Like,
right.
No.
I love the take that the host was so bad that people were resorting to PDA to get
exactly,
through
that they were
the awkwardness.
Yeah.
That to me seemed very, very believable.
My last takeaway was that I loved seeing everyone wearing red carpet glasses.
Yeah, that was cute.
Right.
Ali Wong, Billie Eilish. It was a thing. And it made me think that last week we were talking about how there's a little boy who's 9 years old who wears glasses who is lobbying Apple to change the nerd emoji because he feels it's anti-glasses wearers.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So I felt like Golden Globes was a big win for that little boy.
That's all for this very special episode. We will be back next week at our usual time. Bye.
Bye.
The Run Through Evoke is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.